The Gospel according to Matthew, the 10th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Jesus said to the 12, "A disciple is not above the teacher, nor a slave above the master. It is enough for the disciple to be like the teacher, and the slave like the master. If they have called the master the house of Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? So have no fear of them. For nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing secret that will not become known. What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light. What you hear whispered, proclaim from the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. And even the hairs of your head are all counted. So do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows. Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I also will acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I also will deny before my Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will be members of one's own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. Two verses from this Gospel reading. "Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I also will acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I will also deny before my Father in heaven." Paradox. It's a hallmark of Lutheran theology. As Lutherans, we almost enjoy holding things together that don't really fit together. But we just eventually say, "Well, I think both things are true, even if they're in almost or full contradiction, and it's a matter of faith that we don't know how both of those things are true. We just say they're accurate." There's a relatively famous theology book on Lutheran theology called Paradoxical Vision to describe the way Lutherans embrace these tensions and use them to find a seeming kind of balance. And we have a lot of them. For example, probably the simplest and most known, we say, and not just Lutherans, but most Christians say, that the nature of Jesus is as fully God and fully human. Well, of course, how can someone be fully more than one thing? We don't really know. We just say, both of those things must be true. We'll let God work out how that fits together. There's a lot of examples of theologies of paradoxes, but that might be the simplest or most known one. But one of those paradoxes I want to explore today in Lutheran theology is what we sometimes call the distinction between law and gospel. And some of you are probably quite familiar with law and gospel. It's a classic Lutheran distinction. And I want us to dwell in it a little bit. The law is a full proclamation of what we are to do before God. It challenges us and convicts us. Many of you, when you think of the law, if you're familiar with these terms, you might think about something like the Ten Commandments, or indeed the whole of the covenant given to Moses on Sinai, which includes a lot more than just those Ten Commandments. And you would not be wrong. for thinking about that. Those commandments are the charges for the way we are supposed to live as God's people. They're not suggestions, they're not notions, they're commandments. God's pretty explicit. This is to be done. And the law, though, while it's not wrong to think of that from the Old Testament, the law is not just things from the Old Testament. It's also part of Jesus' message. Jesus continually challenges the disciples and the crowds and whoever would listen. They're indeed meant to go out and act, do things. Jesus has expectations for our lives. Act rightly. Don't sin. Or here in our gospel lesson, acknowledge or confess who I am and do not deny. All those things, wherever Jesus is telling us to do something, which are often very hard to hear, are what a lot of Lutheran theologians call law. And Martin Luther liked to talk about three practical functions of the law in our lives. The first is like a curb to the worst drives that you can have simply by having a sense of what is right or wrong, what we might call a conscience today. The second, Luther talked about, is the law acting like a mirror. If we know the way we're supposed to live before God, then we can look in that mirror and see how we're doing. In Luther's case, he was pretty convinced that we'll always be convicted whenever we do that. That we're always going to be seeing how we're failing before God. And then the third use is as a guide. The law does provide a path for us how we are to live our life. So a curb, a mirror, and a guide. And I bring all of these things up because our gospel lesson today with this statement that we're focusing on, it's a very heavy law statement. Everyone who confesses or acknowledges me before others, I will also acknowledge. But whoever denies me before others, I also will deny. The language of what are we to be doing? Acknowledge or confess who God is and do not deny is a charge for us. It has those functions Luther talked about. Show us, who are we in the mirror? Have I been confessing Christ lately? Have I been denying? Can act as a curb. When in my actions each week could I internally sense that I've been confessing or denying? And it can act as a guide, what I ought to be doing. And it's here in sermons that we'd frequently talk about the way in which we struggle to measure up, talk about being convicted, language about sin, and so on. That's the law of God. And remember, I started this whole thing, this whole sermon, talking about paradox. And we haven't really gotten there yet. The law of God is really hard, but it's not a paradox, it's just hard. What makes it a paradox is that in addition to the law, there is gospel. And gospel functions very differently than law. If the law is what we are supposed to be doing before God and one another, the gospel is what God is doing for us and in us. That even though we have been convicted by the law because, of course, we do sin and fail to follow that law, that, as we had in our epistle lesson last week, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That what makes us right before God is not our ability to do what God commanded, to follow said law, but instead Jesus' death and resurrection, and is given to us freely as a gift. It's what we call grace. And so, we're leaning in to that paradox a little bit here today. Two things are true. One is that God is absolutely commanding us to live in particular ways. And yet also, God freely justifies us apart from anything we do. And it's important to recognize both those things are always true. The goal of the gospel is not just to get us off the hook of the law, as if to say, well, God gave the law just so we could fail, that feel better, because it turned out we didn't really have to follow it anyway. No, we are and continue to be commanded to follow the law, and are and continue to be given grace continually and freely. Both things are true. They don't really fit with each other, but they're true. And I have this whole extended, and I hope not too extended, and too overly depth theological discussion of paradox for you today, because I want to lean us back into our focus. Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I also will acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I also will deny before my Father in heaven. That statement might be kind of a scary statement for some of you, because that statement is a hard law statement. It suggests what we must do. Confess Jesus, do not deny, and it brings consequences. If you do not follow, then Jesus won't have any part with you. It's a hard command, really. And this whole gospel lesson is filled with hard commands. I'm just focusing on that one. But if we look at the whole gospel of Matthew, we might be surprised what we find if we only read this one section. This language of denying, if you deny, then I'll also deny you. That language of denying in the Gospel of Matthew shows up in only one other circumstance, the whole Gospel. It's in Matthew chapter 26, when Peter denies Jesus. In our passage here, it says, whoever denies me before others, I will also deny for my Father in heaven. In Matthew 26:70, it says, Peter denied him before all. The phrase is nearly a quotation. But then, of course, what happens to Peter? Does Peter face these consequences of what happens when people deny? That Jesus will have no part with them? Well, no. After Peter denies, in seemingly the precise way that this passage is talking about, then instead of rejecting Peter, Jesus embraces Peter anyway. So we readers of this gospel are meant to read the whole gospel. We're meant to see these connections between these narratives and see the way that this moves forward. And as such, I think invites us once again into tension and into paradox. How do we reconcile what happened to Peter with what this text says? Here it says, if you deny Jesus, Jesus will deny you. But then Peter does deny, and Jesus doesn't deny Peter. Does that mean that here in this passage that Jesus was basically kidding? As if to say, absolutely don't deny me unless under the proviso you actually deny me, and then it'll be fine. I don't think so. It really means that we're not supposed to deny Jesus. We are supposed to confess. And that's the law. And yet what happens when we do deny this? That our salvation is not dependent upon our own actions, but God's abundant mercy. That's the gospel. Both things remain true. And where this all comes together, for me, is at the end of our gospel reading. When Jesus, for the first time in this gospel, calls the disciples to take up their cross and follow him. Jesus will say that again later on in the gospel, but this is the first time. And in fact, the first time Jesus mentions anything about crosses and that they're going to have anything to do with his ministry. And I think we hear that take up your cross and follow language very frequently as a hard charge of the law. Take up that cross, your burden, whatever it is, and follow. We usually mean it's the cost of discipleship, that following Jesus is not especially easy. And our passage in whole today would certainly suggest that. It talks about divisions that being a follower can cause in our own families. I know some of you could feel that, that your convictions about who Jesus are in your life don't seem to be held by many of your families and friends. We don't live in a world where we're going to be oppressed for those views like they did in the first century, but simply the idea of division and conflicts that can arise are certainly resonant in a society right now that feels so polarized. And so can we sometimes, I think, when we can hear, take up your cross and follow, we hear that long. Be ready to work hard. Be ready to confess who Jesus is, even if it's pretty uncomfortable. And that is there in this gospel reading. But there's another aspect to taking up our cross and following that I don't think we think of as often. Shouldn't the rhetoric of our cross that we pick up have something to do with Jesus' cross? And what if it's not just the hard burden of the cross, but also the work of Jesus on the cross? What if the action of Jesus forgiving and leading us to die to sin with Christ is a part of that cross to be picked up too? That it turns out that in our very burden of what it means to be a disciple, it is actually God's work all along. All the work that Jesus does on the cross that makes us simultaneously sinners and saints, another paradox, that is there too when you pick up the cross and follow. Our cross is Jesus' cross. And everything Jesus does on that cross is done for us right now. Jesus says in this gospel, that which is hidden will be revealed. Sometimes I think when we read this quickly, we assume that this is talking about all the bad things of the other people. But many of those things that are hidden are gospel. Jesus says, these things that I've told you in secret, those are also what is hidden, what is revealed. That the cross we take on ourselves, it does condemn us, but also saves us. Whether we know it or not, Jesus is there in both the conviction of the law and the grace of the gospel. And so are we challenged by this reading and other readings to confess who Christ is? Well, of course, absolutely. But are we also embraced by Christ, whether we confess or not? Yes, also, absolutely. Because that's the character of who God is. One who never fails in providing continual grace for us at all times. Thanks be to God. Amen. By all who are able to stand for a hymn of the day.